This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Early this morning, the 84-year-old former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet was freed from house arrest in England and allowed to return home to Chile. He had been held in England for over 16 months during proceedings to extradite him to Spain to stand trial on charges of genocide, torture, kidnapping, and murder in connection with the disappearance of more than 3,000 people after he took power in a 1973 coup. He remained in power till 1990. Britain ended proceedings against Pinochet on the grounds that his failing health and his, quote, memory deficit made him unfit to stand trial. When Pinochet was placed under house arrest, President Clinton ordered the declassification of all documents that might shed light on human rights abuse, terrorism, and other acts of political violence during the Pinochet era. Thousands of documents have already been released. Another batch will be released in June. Later, we'll talk with the widow of one of Pinochet's victims. First, we're joined by Peter Kornbluh. He's senior analyst at the National Security Archive, which works for the release of classified documents that can shed light on important recent history. I asked Kornbluh his reaction to Pinochet's release.
On the one hand, it's an extraordinarily disappointing day for the international human rights community and certainly for General Pinochet's victims, who are both in Chile and in the United States and around the world. But on the other hand, over these last 16 months, an extraordinary precedent has been set and an extraordinary chain of events has taken place, which has established not only the principle of universal jurisdiction in international law regarding human rights violators like General Pinochet, but has also changed the way Chile will always be and the way people around the world in the United States and elsewhere will always view the history of General Pinochet's repression. So on the one hand, it's a difficult day, but it's also the beginning of a new era for the human rights movement.
What did you hope would have been accomplished if he were extradited and then stood trial?
Very simply, that his victims would have been able to face him in court. That was the basic goal, to see him in court, facing his victims, having the evidence presented in an organized legal fashion for him to face and confront that history and those crimes, and for the world to be able to witness this presentation as well.
How did the attempts to extradite Pinochet and prosecute him lead President Clinton to release documents related to Chile?
Well, Spain, of course, had indicted General Pinochet and 38 of his subordinates. The special prosecutor there had begun an investigation in 1996. And under the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty that Spain has with the United States, Spanish courts had asked Washington, had asked the Clinton administration for evidence. And at the point when General Pinochet was actually arrested in London in October of 1998, the Clinton administration had not responded in any way, shape, or form. After Pinochet's arrest, there was extraordinary pressure from the international community, from some of Pinochet's most famous victims, on the Clinton administration to do something to support the Spanish case. And for a variety of reasons, Clinton administration officials did not want to directly make any pronouncement in support of prosecuting Pinochet. And instead, they decided to do a special declassification project to declassify documents in the name of helping Chile confront its past, of helping American victims of Pinochet's crimes have closure on those cases, and to help, I think, the historical record be given to the American public and to Chileans as well. If somebody like Peter Kornbluh wanted to take these documents and go to Spain and enter them into evidence there, then that could happen. But the administration itself was simply going to release these documents for the public at large.
Well, the documents that have been released so far, and there's more that will be released in June, these documents have reopened two issues. One, what are the atrocities that the Pinochet government was responsible for? And two, what was the involvement of the U.S. government in supporting the coup against Allende and in supporting the Pinochet government? Let's start with what the Pinochet government was responsible for. Do these documents help reveal how much responsibility Pinochet had for murder and torture of dissidents in Chile?
some of the documents that have been declassified so far, and we're talking about over 25,000 pages at this point, are really extraordinary. They record the inner machinery of Pinochet's repression because they're based on sources inside his own military, inside his own secret police, for example. And a number of the intelligence reports that have been declassified do make it clear that Pinochet was directly in the chain of command for the repression that took place. There's one Defense Intelligence Agency document, for example, and I have it here with me, that states that Pinochet was given a briefing every morning at 7:30 by the head of Chile's secret police, known as DINA. And a DINA official told U.S. intelligence that Pinochet issues instructions to DINA, is aware of its activities, and in fact, heads it. Now, DINA, of course, was responsible for the vast majority of the torture, disappearances, murders that took place inside Chile, as well as for the extraordinary acts of international terrorism that took place against Chilean targets abroad, including here in Washington, D.C.
Any other documents you want to excerpt for us that shed light on Pinochet's role in human rights abuses and crimes against humanity?
Well, there was another Defense Intelligence Agency document here that makes it clear that other members of the Chilean military were upset that DINA had such extraordinary powers of repression. And the document shows that these other members of Pinochet's own regime went to him and said, you know, DINA has to be put under control. DINA is a monster. DINA is like the KGB. This is the Chilean military officials talking in these documents. And Pinochet absolutely refused to relinquish his own personal control. As the document puts it, the head of DINA, General Manuel Contreras, has reported exclusively to and received orders only from President Pinochet. There is an apprehension, this document goes on, of many senior military authorities regarding the possibility of DINA becoming a modern-day Gestapo. DINA's autonomous authority is great and increasing. Junta members are unable to influence President Pinochet's decisions concerning DINA. Regarding DINA organization, policies, and operations, Contreras's authority is near absolute, subject only to an unlikely presidential veto.
If Pinochet had stood trial, it would have been for crimes against humanity. Give us a sense of the scope of what crimes he would have been charged for.
He would have been charged for multiple acts of torture. And these documents, I think, help tie him to the abuses that took place. He would have been tried for disappearances. There are still 1,000 people who disappeared in Chile during Pinochet's reign of terror that are unaccounted for, whose families don't know where they are, don't really know if they're actually dead, although assume that they are, and would like to give them a proper burial. This is one of the most outstanding issues of human rights abuses that Chile has still yet to confront, and certainly will when Pinochet returns. Those are some of the cases that he would have been charged with. There was a great deal of back and forth in the British courts about what period of time of Pinochet's atrocities he could actually be accused of if he went to Spain. And the window on this was narrowed to 1988, 1989, 1990, although the charge of conspiracy to commit torture still stood. And under that charge, I think the Spanish case would have gone back to the beginning, the moment of the coup and the days following that, and how the repressive apparatus was created, how Pinochet took direct control of DINA and gave free rein to his secret police forces to commit these horrible acts of human rights atrocities.
My guest is Peter Kornbluh, senior analyst at the National Security Archive. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Peter Kornbluh, senior analyst at the National Security Archive, which works for the release of classified documents, documents that will help us better understand our own recent history. In the documents that have been released with the support of President Clinton, is there new information about U.S. involvement in the coup against Allende and in the support of the Pinochet regime?
In truth, the U.S. intelligence community has so far withheld almost all documentation on the U.S. role in Chile, both the U.S. role in seeking to undermine the Allende government between 1970 and 1973, and the role of the CIA and the U.S. military in helping General Pinochet consolidate his power after the coup in September of 1973. And those documents are missing so far. They are desaparecidos, disappeared, just like so many of Pinochet's victims. We have brought increased pressure on the Clinton administration to make sure that some of these documents are declassified in June when the final release takes place. But so far, there's still extraordinary resistance all these years later by U.S. agencies, U.S. national security agencies, to actually let this history loose once and for all.
Let's start with what we do know so far as the result of the recent release of documents and earlier releases as well. There's notes that date back to 1970, and these were notes, I think, handwritten by then-CIA Director Richard Helms after a meeting with President Nixon. Would you just summarize what's revealed in that memo?
Well, those notes actually were declassified some years ago as part of the major Senate investigation into CIA covert operations in Chile. It's a rather extraordinary document. It's the handwritten notes of Richard Helms, the director of the CIA, listening to Richard Nixon's orders on September 15th, 1970, just after Salvador Allende has been elected, but before Allende has actually been inaugurated. And Nixon basically tells Helms, spend $10 million, use the best men we have, make the economy scream, don't tell the State Department or the U.S. Embassy what we're doing. This is a top priority. And so it's a record promoting of the President of the United States telling the CIA to go to Chile, undermine democracy, promote a military coup if possible. These orders set off a whole chain of events, most of the documentation on which has yet to be declassified. The whole three-year history of U.S. efforts that began with Nixon's directive to the CIA to promote a coup is largely still hidden. And as we are asking the Chileans to redress their past, the human rights abuses there, we, I think, in the United States have to also uncover and acknowledge and confront our own role in undermining democracy in Chile and promoting the violent coup and the terror that took place thereafter.
Would you sum up some of the documents that were released back in the 70s that indicate that there was U.S. complicity in the coup?
Over the years, only a handful of documents, I'd say a dozen or so, that are really top secret, dealing with Nixon and Kissinger and CIA's high-level decision-making on covert operations in Chile have been declassified. Those that have been declassified are heavily censored. They have huge passages that are blacked out still. But those documents show that Nixon told his national security advisor, Henry Kissinger, to kind of oversee this project. Kissinger called in the CIA and had them report to him on coup plotting in the fall of 1970, an effort to keep Allende from being inaugurated. And after Allende was inaugurated, Kissinger basically said to the CIA, you know, keep every effort on Allende's weak spot until new marching orders are given. And no new marching orders were not given until the coup took place in 1973. And at that point, Kissinger oversaw a committee that changed the covert operations in Chile from being destabilization operations against Allende to being operations to help General Pinochet consolidate. We don't have any of the documents, for the most part, on that period of time, 1973, 1974, 1975. And that is critical history that absolutely must be released if we are to understand the past and go forward.
Now, there is a document that was recently released that sheds light on the murder of a young American man in Chile named Charles Horman, and his story was dramatized in the 1982 film Missing. He was arrested during the coup, taken to the stadium, which was being used as a detention center, and killed. And a question has always been, you know, did the U.S. Embassy in Chile or any other U.S. government officials know anything about this? And was the U.S. government complicit in any way? Would you tell us what this document reveals and read an excerpt for us?
For many years, the U.S. government's position was that they did not know what happened to Charles Horman and another American who was also executed in the National Stadium, Frank Tarucci. That was their official position. They hid that. They hid the truth from the families, particularly the Horman family, for almost 26 years. In 1980, they declassified a document, but portions of it were blacked out. And recently, the same document has been declassified under this special project, and now those passages can be read, and they're extraordinary. They show that the State Department knew that the Chilean military had killed Charles Horman, despite our public statements that we didn't know what had happened to him, and that the State Department shared the suspicions of the family that the U.S. intelligence community, the CIA, might have had some direct or indirect role. The document, the passage that was blacked out originally reads, "Based on what we have, we are persuaded that the government of Chile sought Horman and felt threatened enough to order his immediate execution. The government of Chile might have believed this American could be killed without negative fallout from the U.S. government." And it goes on, "There is some circumstantial evidence to suggest, according to this declassified State Department document, that U.S. intelligence may have played an unfortunate part in Horman's death. At best, that role was limited to providing or confirming information that helped motivate his murder by the government of Chile. At worst, U.S. intelligence was aware the government of Chile saw Horman in a rather serious light, and U.S. officials did nothing to discourage the logical outcome of the government of Chile's paranoia." This, of course, is as close to a smoking gun of a document as we have seen on the Horman case. And even though it is referring to circumstantial evidence, it makes it clear that the State Department itself had grave concerns about the conduct and possible complicity of other branches of the U.S. government in Chile. I have to say that in these documents that were declassified, the State Department says, you know, we can only read our own documents. Somebody's got to go to the CIA and get them to investigate. That never happened back then, and that is one of the things that needs to happen now. It's a difficult situation. To date, the CIA has not released a single paragraph of its own documents on the Horman case as part of this special declassification project.
Why was Charles Horman seen as a threat by Pinochet?
You know, Charles Horman may well simply have been in the wrong place at the wrong time. On the day of the coup, he and a friend were in the port city of Valparaiso, and they met a number of U.S. military officials and overheard conversations that they were having, which Charlie and his friend interpreted as complicity in the coup. They were stuck there. They got a ride back to Santiago from a U.S. military official, Captain Ray Davis. And that's how they crossed paths with Americans. 2 days later, Charlie disappeared and was not seen again until his body was discovered in a hidden grave in the National Cemetery weeks later. But we don't really know at this point what happened. U.S. intelligence officials have never opened their files for public scrutiny on this case, in the case of Frank Tarucci. U.S. intelligence officials who had contact with the Chilean military have never testified in court about this. The historical record remains buried, and for the families, the Horman family, the Tarucci family, have closure on this case. The files have to be opened, the evidence reviewed, leads followed, Chileans who actually did the murders identified, and the story told.
Why is this case so important?
Well, one reason it's so important is because it is at the heart of U.S. policy towards democracy and or dictatorship. These two young Americans were killed as part of a U.S.-supported coup. And their deaths were essentially swept aside by the efforts of Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and other U.S. officials to embrace the Pinochet dictatorship and keep peripheral issues, trivial matters, as one document refers to them, from interrupting the new relationship between the United States and the military government of Chile. We have a declassified memorandum of conversation between Henry Kissinger and Augusto Pinochet, for example, June of 1976, at the height of Pinochet's repression, where Kissinger says to Pinochet, "We're sympathetic to what you're trying to do in Chile here. We think you're the victim of a left-wing conspiracy around the world, you know, to cast you in a bad light. But we supported your overthrow of the Allende government, which was going communist. You did the West a service." And that's the kind of attitude that came to play in 1973 when these two Americans were killed.
Peter Kornbluh is senior analyst at the National Security Archive. He'll be back later in the show. We'll also talk with Joyce Horman about her husband, Charles, who was executed by the Pinochet regime. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.